Welcome again to our series on Know the Bible. These sessions are brief. They are intended to give a little, if I could say this, glimpse of the treasures that are hidden in this wonderful book, God's Bible. And we are looking at it book by book. 39 books in the Old Testament, 27 in the New, and we're trying to do a session on each to spark an interest in you that you will read, not just the Gospels, but you'll read every one of those 66 books, and you'll get all the treasures that are contained therein, and your inner man will be nourished. Well, we come now to the fourth book. The first was Genesis, the book of creation, the book where we see the favored nation, Israel, was birthed. Exodus, we saw how that favored nation was brought up out of the land of Egypt. And then the book of Leviticus, where we saw something of God establishing the worship and spiritual life in the nation of Israel, and how we too can garner truth from it and see how we too can walk with God in holiness. Well, we now come to the book of Numbers, and as you look at it, it is a book of numbers. Essentially, at the beginning, we see a whole list of how many people in those tribes were there in the wilderness. We see their names. Then we see how many were in each tribe, all the males and so forth. And at the beginning, it does not seem to be very spiritual or very exciting. But you know, you have to get beyond, as it were, the covers of a book to get the content. And so it is in the book of Numbers. Get beyond the numbering. And there's some beautiful truths concerning those numbers, which we won't touch now. But I want to come now into this book of Numbers. And essentially, what is it? It's a story of the children of Israel. They arrived at Mount Sinai, and now, coming out of Mount Sinai, they're going to cross this tremendous wilderness, and they are going to come to the hills of Moab just before the River Jordan, where they'll cross over. Now then, we find, first of all, God saying, you have compassed this mountain long enough. You know, there's a tendency, and we're all creatures of comfort. And we all like, you know, when we come to a nice place to stay there. Well, that's what the children of Israel were doing around Mount Sinai. There was the presence of God. They were being well provided for. And they wanted to stay there. But God said, you have camped around this mountain long enough. And that is something that we have to understand in our Christian experience. We cannot continually stay in one place. We have to move on. We have to move on. I don't say geographically. I'm talking spiritually. Well, you know, I've known many people who have not moved on. They have not moved on. And the result is that a blessing that once was life for them now becomes death. You see, God is a God of life, and life is moving on. You don't go backwards. You don't stay where you are. You move on. And so here it is. They moved on. They moved on. And they came to a place called Kadesh Barnea. And when they came to this place, it was on the borders of the land of promise. And they should have gone from Kadesh Barnea right in to that land of promise. But when they got there, they wanted to send in spies to make sure what the land of promise was like. Well, they sent in 12 spies, one for each of the tribes. Well, after a long time, they came back, and they could hardly carry the produce of the land. It took two of them, for example, to carry a bough with all the grapes that are on. They said, surely it's a land flowing with milk and honey. Just what God promised us is there. And oh, the children of Israel, oh, did they feel good. But then 10 of the spies said, but there's a problem. In that land, the inhabitants are like giants, and we like grasshoppers. And they discouraged the whole nation, something like 3 million people. They discouraged them with that testimony. There were two, Joshua and Caleb, who said, now look, God has been with us throughout this journey. And if he has a favor to us, we are well able to go in and take the land. Well, the people believed the 10 spies. And the result was, God said, look, you have tempted me 10 times. It's interesting. There were 10 specific trials through the journey from Egypt to Kadesh Barnea. And those trials were affecting every aspect of their life. God was testing them. You know, they were complaining about the food. They were complaining about this. They were complaining about that. And every trial they failed. And so when it came to Kadesh Barnea, the 10th trial, they failed, the Apostle Paul tells us in Hebrews, because they lacked faith. The word was not mixed with faith. Well, so they refused to go in. So God said, all right, you'll go back into the wilderness until every one of you are dead. From those who are the age of 20, coming out of Egypt, you'll all die, but I'll bring your children, the new generation, across the promised land. Well, for 38 years, Israel traversed that wilderness. What kind of a place was it? Jeremiah describes it. Jeremiah chapter 2 and verse 8, he said, in verses 6 and 8, he said this, it was a land full of pits, a land through which no man passed through, a terrible land. And yet God kept them by a pillar of fire by night and a cloud of glory by day. He led them. Sometimes they were there only a day or two. They moved on. Sometimes they were there for weeks or months in a spot. God leading them for 38 years. But some certain things happened in that wilderness that are very important for our spiritual understanding, development, and training and instruction. One of them was rebellion. There were three leaders, Abiram, Dathan, and Korah. And they gathered 250 of the choice princes of the tribes of Israel. And they arose against Moses and Aaron. And they said, you take too much upon you. You know, the whole of the people are holy. It's not just you that are anointed. Well, unfortunately, shall I say, rebellion against leadership is age old. God appoints leaders, not man. And the result was God came down. And he said, separate yourselves from these wicked men. And God opened the earth and they fell down into the pit. You know, it's a very serious thing to rise up against leadership. Leadership is chosen by God. And whatever you may think, as these three, Abiram, Dathan, and Korah, that they could have done the job as well as Moses and Aaron. Well, could they have done? Certainly not. They hadn't been had the preparation of Moses and Aaron. But you see, Moses and Aaron were chosen by God. And so when these three rose up against them, God was not going to recognize them. God had not appointed them, and he removed them. As an awesome lesson to us throughout all ages, don't touch the leadership. Don't touch the leadership. Don't touch the leadership. If you do, you're finished. And I've seen so many situations in my life, and here I am, 80 years of age, I've seen so many things in my life whereby people have risen up against leaders, and God has dealt with them, and terrible things happen to them. You cannot touch leadership because you're touching the anointed of the Lord. You're touching those whom God has appointed before the foundation of the world. You're challenging the wisdom of God. Now then, there was another situation, and this is, you know, what can happen in any wilderness, of course. They hadn't got water. And so God said, I will give you water. This is in Numbers 21, and verse 17 onwards. Now, what is most interesting here is this, that this little episode of God saying, I will give you water, is indicative of what he does spiritually. And so the first thing, now here they are in the wilderness, the first thing that happens, they start to sing, spring up, O well. That seems extraordinary, doesn't it? Here you are in the wilderness and no water, and you start singing, and the whole congregation says, spring up, O well. And then the princes dug the well with their staves, under the direction of the lawmaker, Moses. So this was no ordinary well. This was no ordinary incident of God giving water. It was something that God wanted to instill in our hearts and give us understanding of how he gives spiritual water. You see, when the woman at the well came to Jesus, and you know, Jesus said, if you knew who it was who was speaking to you, you would have asked of him water, and he would have given you a well of water springing up into everlasting life. Speaking of the well of water that God gives to us when we come to salvation. Well, how do we get that well springing up? We sing and we worship. And as we sing and we worship, that well of bubbling water will bubble up in our lives. But so often, you know, what happens, as it did in Genesis 26, you know, the wells that Abraham had dug, oh, the Philistines filled them in and Isaac had to re-dig them. You know, often, you know, our wells of living water will be blocked up and we have to get the stones out. But you see here, it wasn't ordinary people who dug this well. It was the princes, it was the elders, and they were doing it under the direction, as it were, of the pastor. And if you have a well, your well in your heart is blocked up, then you go to the pastor, and the pastor will appoint you, as it were, an elder, who will get those stones out of your heart so that the well of water can spring up constantly within you. It's a lesson here. Well, now we move on, and they're getting close to the situation where they're coming near to the Moab, and now Balak, the king of Moab, observes the children of Israel passing through his land. He's already heard of the tremendous triumphs that they've had against their enemies and how God gave them victory. He is afraid. Now, Balak, of course, has an army. But the extraordinary thing, who does Balak go to for help against something like 3 million men? Who does he go to? He goes to one man. And who is this man? His name is Balaam. And Balaam is an extraordinary man. He's a prophet of God, but he has a mixture in his life. He mixes the true with witchcraft. And he is well known. Balak sends for him and says, "Look, I know that whom you bless is bless, and whom you curse is curse. Come, come, come." He sends his princes to him with, you know, considerable amount of wealth. He said, "Come." Balaam says, "I can't move except God tells me." And so he said, "Wait a night here." And he comes to God, and God said, "Well, who are these men? Well, they've come that I might curse Israel." God said, "Don't go with them." All right, that's a clear commandment. Don't go. Well, they go, these princes go back to Balak, and Balak says, "Well, I've got to have Balaam." So what happens is this. He sends mightier princes with more wealth to persuade Balaam. Now, Balaam has already heard from God, "Don't go. Don't go." Well, they come to Balaam. And Balaam says, "Wait here, I will ask God." "Well, wait a minute, you've already heard from God. God doesn't want you to curse his people." "But what is the problem?" You see, the problem is there is money involved, and Balaam has that terrible curse, a love of money. Well, you ask God the first time, he'll tell you what to do. And then you really want to go, as Balaam did. He wanted the money. And he asked God again. So God gives him the desire of his heart. And you be very careful when you ask God for something that you're not asking out of a desire of your heart that's contrary to the will of God, because God will give you the desires of your heart. Now look what happened. He said to Balaam, "Well, you can go, but you can only speak what I say." Well, now, Balaam is very happy. God is furious. So he's on his donkey. He's going. And an angel is about there with a sword. The donkey sees, he has his eyes open, sees, and tries to avoid the angel, crushes Balaam's knee against the wall. Balaam is furious, gets off his donkey and hits that donkey. Hits him and hits him. Now God does a miracle and opens up the mouth of the donkey. And he says to Balaam, "Have I not always obeyed you?" Now Balaam is so accustomed to the miraculous that he's holding a conversation with the donkey and said, "Yes, but you crushed my But instead of realizing, my, this donkey's speaking. He's so accustomed to the miraculous. He's arguing with the donkey. Well, he then sees the angel. The angel said, if that donkey had not stopped, I would have slain you. He saved your life. Now, he says, go on to Balak, but don't speak anything but that I give you to speak. So here comes Balaam. Now, to Balak. And there are what are called four oracles, or four sayings of Balaam, that are very instructive and very interesting. Remembering we are dealing with a man who is a prophet of God. There's witchcraft there. And also, he has a love of money. So it's a real mixture. Now, look at these. I've just picked out a few things. The first oracle, he said, how can I curse that which God hath not cursed? In other words, those that are blessed of God, you can't touch them. And then he said, now this is very interesting, concerning Israel. Now, this is what Balaam said, the one with terrible mixture. Let me die the death of the righteous. Oh, Balaam, a wonderful wish. Let me die the death of the righteous, but you're not upright, Balaam. How can you cry out and expect that to be answered? So he cries out and says, let my death be like the death of Israel. Oh, no. That's a very nice prayer, but one that's not going to be answered, because Balaam later on was slain by the Israelites. And then the second oracle. God is not a man that he should lie. Hath he not said, and shall he not do it? Oh, what a profound statement that is. You know, when God gives you a promise, you can quote this, oh God, you're not a man that you should lie. Haven't you said it? And you'll do it. Didn't you do it for Joseph? You've made him a promise, you fulfilled it. You've made me a promise, I believe it, you will fulfill it. For you are not a man that you should lie. Oh, how profound that is. What a comfort that is. When God speaks, we believe. For he is not a man that he should lie. The third one is very significant too. Balaam, speaking of Israel, said this, blessed is he that blesseth thee. You remember we said that Israel, the children of Israel, are descended from Israel, true, but that was Jacob, who's descended from Isaac, who's descended from Abraham. Abraham had a fantastic promise from God. He said, in blessing I will bless thee, and multiplying, I will multiply thee. And then he said, I will bless those that bless thee. And here we find Balaam repeating that. Oh, that same promise, that same covenant that God gave to Abraham is on the children of Israel even today. Though they're rebellious and so forth. But he that blesseth them will be blessed. And that is why the greatest friends of Israel are the evangelical Christians. They bless Jerusalem. They bless Israel. They give it their time and their money. And the result is that God blesses them. Whosoever blesseth thee shall be blessed. But then the fourth oracle in Numbers 24 and verse 14, verse 17. He said, I shall behold him, but not nigh. There Balaam is saying, yes, I'll get back to God. God indeed will receive me in spite of all things. And I'll get back to God, but my judgment is in eternity. I'll be in heaven. I'll see him, meaning the Lamb of God, the Lord Jesus Christ. I'll see him, but not near. Oh, what a terrible judgment. That throughout all eternity, he will behold Jesus, but Jesus will be far away. He will not come nigh Balaam because of Balaam's mixture, love of money, mixturing witchcraft with that which is true. And the result is, I shall behold him, but not nigh. These messages, beloved, this book of Numbers, you see, is far more rich than the cover would have us believe. Just the numbers, oh, look at the richness of the truth. Now, look, I'm going to make an appeal to you to wholeheartedly follow the Lord. When God says no, don't you ask him to say yes. Do that which is right in his sight. And then you will die the death of the righteous. You will die the death of the faithful patriarchs. And in heaven, you will see him, and he will acknowledge you. You will walk with him. You will see his glory. And, beloved, this is my desire for you, that in heaven you are very nigh unto the Lord Jesus Christ. God bless you.